Okay, everybody, welcome to the call. This is the first of two information-packed calls with marketing legend Dan Kennedy. And Dan, I know you don't like it when I call you a marketing legend, but let's face it, we are all on this call because we want to be you. We want your lifestyle. We want your bank account. We want to know how you run your business so effortlessly so we can do it too. And I want to tell you that I have over 8,000 subscribers on my eZine list, and when people sign up with my eZine, I ask them right then and there, what's your biggest question about copywriting? And about 25% don't answer at all, but of the ones who do, half of those people are interested in having a lucrative copywriting career. So you're talking about 3,000 people. I can assure you that there are not 3,000 people on this call. So the problem a lot of copywriters have, especially newbies, is they want to hang out their shingle and start making in the big bucks, but it takes a lot more than that. It takes investing in yourself and learning from someone who's been there before, like Dan. And that's why I have no doubt that those of you who are on this call are going to be wildly successful in your business because you're not afraid to invest in yourself. The information you're going to learn today and next week isn't available anywhere else. Even a lot of high-level copywriters don't have access to the information that Dan is going to share. So you are part of a privileged group, and I want to acknowledge you and congratulate you for being on this training. With that being said, I'd like to welcome Dan Kennedy to the call.
Hello there.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you. Dan, do you have any opening remarks for us eager students?
I'll let folks know sort of how this is going to work. I'm actually going to work backwards. And so tonight, I want to talk about what you do once you have clients. And so we're going to talk about client management and optimizing income and contracts.
Cool.
And it requires something of a leap of faith for people who perhaps do not have a good client base, that our second night I'm going to take care of all those questions.
Uh-huh.
And give you the keys to rapidly escalate the quantity and quality of clients that you get, and talk then about where to hunt for them and how to find them and how to attract them and all of that.
Great.
So tonight I've got five big stress strategies that I want to get through. And as I heard you tell them, we'll email them tomorrow a little summary of the stress strategies. But
right.
Of course, people should take notes. And we'll also email them a contract items checklist so that they have that. And then just before starting, for people who may not be totally familiar, I thought 2 or 3 minutes just sort of background and what my business looks like now might be useful.
Perfect.
I got my first money for copywriting in 1973, $500 for a Beat the Control campaign. That was a cattle call. The company ran an ad, and anybody could come in and try and beat the current control. And if you won, they then used yours as the control, and you got $500, which at the time I thought that was the most amazing thing I had ever encountered. I briefly had a real ad agency, and then was in the business of any client in any business to do anything, anywhere, at any time, for any fee. And that lasted about a year and a half. And when I moved to Phoenix from Ohio in 1978, I hung out 3 shingles, and one of them was copywriter, and I've never made less than $100,000 a year doing it, and always part-time, still today. The last 10 years, the income from copywriting, fees, and back-end royalties have exceeded $500,000 a year, and the last 5, over $1 million a year. I'm very fortunate to have built up a stable base of long-term clients with whom about 3/4 of the business is with them, with a continuing group of clients who keep coming back for more. And in these days, I'm even turning down work from past and repeat clients recently referred out a lot of Magalog work for one of my clients just because I could not possibly fit it in. What I think is important is that most of the business practices that I want to talk about tonight have changed very little from my first years to now. The numbers have changed, but the business practices have not. And the other thing, I guess, that would be encouraging to some people is I have absolutely no qualifications. I'm a high school grad, no college education, no apprenticeship at an ad agency or anything like that. I did kind of grow up around the peripherals of the business. My father was a commercial artist and had a typesetting company, and those things don't even exist today, thanks to the computer.
Right.
And I have direct sales background, which is actually pretty useful. And the reason we're doing this is mostly I've just become increasingly aware of very significant differences between my business practices and the way other copywriters operate. It's really only a few years ago that I paid attention to the trade directory called Who's Charging What, and it was actually quite a shock to see some people whose names we all know and their published rates, and frankly how low they were. And I've long taken note of the fact that name copywriters can be found after 10 and 15 and 20 years still running ads in DM News and Target offering to do free critiques to get business, which is an appropriate technique early, but definitely shouldn't be necessary after 20 years in the business. So my conclusion is, as in most businesses, that the majority is wrong. And my methods are right.
I like your methods.
And so that's what we're going to talk about tonight.
That's great. You know, I got a big shock, too, when I got Who's Charging What as well. Just the range of copywriter fees and the names of people who I recognize their names. Their authors, their books are in Borders, and they're still, you know, charging what compared to you is just peanuts. It's amazing. I'm trying to mute in the background. If someone has background noise and I'm not able to do this, please press star 6. Let me try this again. That was it.
There we go.
That's it.
Nope, it's back, whatever it was. I can hear it again. It's kind of like a rattling little can.
Yeah, I thought you might be riding your horses.
I love technology. It's nothing I'm doing.
All right, well, let's get into the strategies because I know people want some content and we have tons of it. So the first strategy that you shared with me is that we need to understand what we do. So what do you mean by that and why is that important?
Well, I find in consulting in all sorts of industries and professions that most people actually don't know what business they're in. And I don't think copywriters are any different. And most of them start out limiting their income with their own self-sabotage by misunderstanding and as a result misrepresenting to their clients and their prospective clients what they're all about and what it is that they do. And direct response copywriting is unique in the world of copywriting. I mean, there's traditional advertising copywriting, which can be 4 words of copy on a full page in USA Today with a logo and a picture of a car. And it's pretty hard to make a value case for that. But it exists. There's technical copywriting. What I do and undoubtedly what most people on this call are doing or contemplating doing and should be contemplating doing is direct response copywriting. And that's a specialty, and it requires multiple skills, most notably sales skills. And so I compare it to being a cardiac surgeon versus an MD, and or a cosmetic or an implant dentist versus a general dentist. And as you climb up the specialist ladder, up goes the value and up goes the fee.
Right.
And the direct response function is actually the most valuable there is in a business. I'll tell you a little story. Some years ago, I did quite a bit of work for a year for Weight Watchers Corporate. At the time, they were owned by Heinz, the folks that make ketchup.
Right.
They've since changed hands again. But at the time, the president of Weight Watchers had been sent over from Heinz, and he had come from Europe. He was a European brand manager. And nice fellow, but pretty much clueless about the Weight Watchers business. In fact, one time I was having a conversation with him, and I said, and Les, by the way, was my height. He's about 6'4", but has the waist size I had when I was in high school. He's got about a 27-inch waist. He's flat as a board. You could slide him, you know, underneath the door. And I said, Les, I said, you know, have you ever had a weight problem? No. Anybody in your family ever have a weight problem? No. Ever sell anything? Maybe while you were working your way through school, you know, nose to nose, toes to toes, down and dirty? No. Ever work at a retail store and sell anything to anybody face to face? No. And then the real kicker, ever been to a Weight Watchers meeting? No. So he pretty much was clueless. And so one day he calls me into his office. This is about 3 months into my doing work for them. And he says, I've discovered a problem. He says, I've done some calculations. And we're paying you more per hour than we're paying me. And I said, Les, I'm glad you got the door closed. I said, because here's the fact of the matter. You know how to do everything there is to do here far better than I, with the exception of one thing, and that is to make the phone ring and make people show up at meetings. That you don't have a clue about, and I'm the guy who knows how to do that. And without me, everything else you do is pretty useless. So it's appropriate that you're paying me more than you're paying you, but we'll keep it our little secret and we won't tell anybody. And that really is true. I mean, most of the clients that you deal with are going to be adept at other functions of their business, but may not be particularly adept at the marketing functions. And even if they conceptually understand them, and actually you hope they do, they probably are not going to be capable of translating their sales functions into media, into print as you are. And yet, everything else they know how to do, and everything else they produce, and whatever bricks and mortar buildings they own, and whatever patents they own, and whatever products they have, are greatly diminished in value, if not rendered valueless, without the ability to get them sold. And so it's really very important to have an understanding, I think, of the extreme value that you bring to the table so that you can position and present it properly.
Yeah, so it's a lot more than just copywriting, quote-unquote.
Well, yeah, and as a matter of fact, it's extremely important to think of it that way, and again, to present it that way. And so very quickly, basically, there's three things that we bring to the table or that we do when we arrive at copy that sells. One is we actually create assets. And the value of an ad or a sales letter, especially one that's evergreen, that has long life, is enormous and can be in the hundreds of thousands or even millions of dollars. I'll quickly take you through a few examples. I mean, I've now got over 25 sales letter or copywriting projects where the back end royalties have paid me more than $100,000. One of those is a sales letter I wrote 8 or 9 years ago for someone in the real estate field, and it's been worth millions of dollars to him, obviously, for it to have paid me six figures. And the asset continues to have value today. And what's significant about that is there is no other asset in his business. That is, as valuable. Not the office building he owns, in which his office sits, not any equipment, not any copyright. This is it. This is the biggest asset he's got. For clients in the seminar business, restaurant marketing systems now 2 years in a row, I've done their boot camp projects and been paid over $100,000. But last year's campaign put 400 people in a program at $3,000 a piece, give or take.
Wow.
Which, if the math is right, that's $1.2 million. And at the event, 100 people were put into his coaching programs at $10,000 a year, which I believe is another million. So that's an asset that's produced $2.2 million in business.
Did you have to educate him that that was an asset, or does he know now?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I've educated him over a period of time. Certainly, when you first get them, you have to educate them.
Okay.
Because it's critically important that nobody looks at this as typewritten words on a piece of paper. You or them. I had a client go by the inch, did a sales letter and a half-hour television show and an audio tape for them, and doubled the size of the business overnight and drove the entire business for 8 consecutive years. So pretty much an evergreen asset, ultimately making the client so rich that he hit his enough is enough number and closed the business and walked away. So we're creating assets that have tangible value, much the same as a piece of equipment has tangible value. The second thing we're often doing is creating additional profit centers, quite often from underexploited customers or back-end opportunities. Most clients that you're going to work with may be doing a good job on the front end of their business at getting customers, but then leaving all sorts of money on the table on the back end, where you get to go and play and create marketing campaigns that produce money out of thin air for them. And so again, this is like another asset. This is a business within a business. And each marketing campaign that creates a new profit center can be viewed that way, as a business within a business. So, for example, some years ago, for all of my clients in the seminar business, I invented selling the seminar in a box on tape, starting at that campaign even in advance of the seminar itself, and then a flip-up. So if you bought the seminar in a box from 2003, then immediately another campaign went into place to give you full credit for what you spent for the box toward the seminar in 2004. So the one direct mail campaign really begat 3 direct mail campaigns, and the whole thing created a profit center that wasn't there before. Now, when you do that, you may very well bring $100,000, $200,000, $500,000 a year in as a new and additional profit center. And that, again, is very different from here's 6 type pages. And the third thing we do is we solve problems. And quite often, as you become known to clients and have relationships with clients, that's what's going to happen. Some years ago, I'll give you a great example. Some years ago in the network marketing industry, there was a widely used generic audio tape that hundreds of nutrition companies used. It was called Dead Doctors Don't Lie. And it was so proliferate that I'm going to wager a third of the people on the call received at least one. The FDA ultimately decided that the tape itself was fraudulent. And they descended on the companies that were using it. And depending upon what else was going on with the company, they either put them completely out of business or they fined them heavily and gave them very brief windows of time to get that tape out of the field. And I got a phone call from a large MLM company that was using this tape, and I had known the I hadn't done any work for them in years, but I had actually known the president's father, and I was known to them. And now when they were in, and they were never willing to pay my fees to have me come in and do anything until they were in real trouble. And then fee wasn't the issue. You know,
yeah.
The call was, we're taking this tape away from 200,000 of telling them they can't use it anymore. And we have to replace it with something that will be as effective. And we have to replace it with it yesterday. So we need you to write it. And now fee is not a discussion. It's how fast can you fit us in and how much will it cost to have you bump whoever's in line in front of us. And so quite often, that's what we're doing. We're stepping in and solving a very serious problem. I just got hired yesterday, as a matter of fact, a very large contract for a company in a particular industry where not only are they, but the entire industry is in trouble. And so we're not talking really about a marketing problem. We're talking about a rescue.
Right.
And they're looking at the marketing campaign I'm going to create as reinventing their business. And that's worth a great deal of money.
That clearly is. So you're talking about creating assets and additional profit centers and solving problems. So it's really something a lot deeper. It leads into the next strategy, really, which is redefining and expanding your role.
Yeah, when you think of your role, here's what you don't want. You do not want to be defined as narrowly as or just as a copywriter. And now that begs your own definition, your own thinking, and your own language. And I would give you two analogies. One is the doctor pharmacist or architect construction worker analogy. And so you go to the pharmacist to get the prescription filled. The doctor does the diagnosis and decides what the prescription ought to be. Who makes the most money?
Right.
The other analogy then is contractor or carpet layer. So who makes the most money in that equation, the contractor or the carpet layer? And so from a positioning and a definitional standpoint, the money position that you want to be in is in front of, in control of, diagnosis and prescription. You don't want to just be filling prescriptions. And so a lot of people think of this copywriting thing as the client is going to do the prescribing. And so the client calls you in and says, I need a half-page ad to sell this bottle of Glop that is going to run in this magazine. And how much are you going to charge to write this half-page ad? And that entire scenario is deadly. And it's a scenario that you don't want to be in. Because maybe they need a half-page ad and maybe they don't. In all probability, they don't know what they need. And in all probability, they may not need an ad at all, or they may need a two-page spread, or they may need a small box ad, but they may need it in 200 publications, or they may need an ad that drives to a recorded message, that drives to a website, that drives to a teleseminar, and they don't know any of that. So to let them give you the assignment, you know, like the old Mission Impossible show, right?
Right.
Where the voice comes over the tape recorder and says, your mission, should you decide to accept it, is, and in 30 seconds, this will self-destruct.
Right.
Well, you don't want to be that hired guy being sent off on a mission. You want to be the person doing the diagnosis and prescription and actually deciding what the mission is with and for the client. And that's this whole issue of redefining your role. Now, in the second night, when we're together, I'm going to talk at length about how this comes into play from the very first square, from attracting the client, from starting the relationship with the client. And by the way, this answers a lot of questions, which a lot of the questions you sent me, the question's pretty much divided, by the way, between beginners and experienced folks. And the questions from the experienced folks, a lot of them had to do with how do we keep the client from screwing things up after we do them, right? Which, you know, Gary Halbert has this list on his wall of the, I forget the number now, but, you know, the 30 best ways for copywriters not to get paid. And the first 10 are client doesn't do it. And that's real life. Client compliance is a big problem. And so a lot of the questions were, how do we keep the client from arguing with us about long copy?
Yep.
How do we keep the client from fighting with us? And this redefinition of role from the very beginning actually preempts and eliminates 90% of those problems. So we'll be talking about that the next night.
Fantastic. I can't wait to hear that one, too. All right, next strategy. Strategy number three is copywriting in the context of strategy. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's a continuation of this role issue, and it is that you want to be involved as a strategist and then write copy, not as a copywriter put in a box and given a job to do. And there's two reasons for it. One is the client's frankly not qualified to diagnose and prescribe. He shouldn't be his own doctor. At the very least, left to his own devices, he's going to overlook opportunities. He's going to ignore media. He will typically too narrowly define the job and the tools to be used to do the job.
And why is that, Dan? Is he too close to it?
Well, it's a lot of things. He's too close to it. He doesn't want to open his wallet on his own anyway. There's a lot he doesn't know. So you take a client who decides he wants a full-page ad, but does he know whether it should drive to a phone number or whether it should drive to a recorded message? Does he know whether or not it should have the website in it? And if it should it go to his regular website that already exists, which probably sucks, or should it go to a website set up specifically to link to that ad? Should he be doing, when he does a direct mail campaign, should he be doing a voice blast in front of it or behind it? So he doesn't even think of these things, and it's up to us to think of them from a standpoint of redefining the role, expanding the work we do with the client, and exercising greater control over the client. So he's just not qualified to diagnose and prescribe. And the second reason is, if you view this in terms of assignments, that's minimum wage work. That's the carpet layer. That's me, the contractor, calling you in and saying, nail down that carpet over there and make sure it's straight. Okay? And that's low wage work. Projects, higher wage work. And relationships are high wages plus profit sharing. So you've got to define your role in a way that gives you the greatest economic opportunity. Let me just quickly take you through a couple of examples so you kind of see in real life examples how this happens.
Cool. So
I have a client I've worked with off and on. Sometimes he goes 2 or 3 years in between. It's a practice management company in chiropractic and dentistry. Called me in, and what he thought he needed was a new seminar brochure. What he really needed and what he wound up buying was complete business reinvention. A new theme, new identity, complete set of new material. He also thought he needed a renewal campaign for his Tape of the Month product, which he viewed as one, a sales letter. What he wound up buying from me was a sequence of 5 sales letters and a re-engineering of the product itself from 1 level to 2 levels of subscription and membership versus subscription. And I might add, what was significant about that is I didn't improve the renewal rate over what he had done on his own the year before, 1 iota. We renewed exactly the same percentage. However, I improved the revenue by over 45% because I created a second level, a higher priced premium level, and I repositioned everything as membership. His mind was this was going to be a $15,000 job. It wound up a $45,000 contract, plus royalties, of course.
But he gets more out of it in the end, right? So he doesn't mind.
No, of course not. No. Very few people actually begrudge you your fair share when the positioning is right to start with.
Right.
I have another client very recently. Thought it was just a rewrite of his generic